las preguntas. Sí, rompe tu preludio y dime cómo es que yo soy yo, del origen de esa gran explosión.
Hi, this is Dave Douglas, and that's the music of Fabian Almazan from a record called Alcanza. I'll be talking to Fabian in this episode today about his music and his career and his history as a band leader, as a community leader. He runs a label called Biophilia Records. He's played with Terrence Blanchard, lots of people. He's also on my latest album, Dizzy Atmosphere, which you can get at greenleafmusic.com. Come over and join us. There's all kinds of stuff happening at Bandcamp. You can subscribe to the label and get the entire catalog. So that's greenleafmusic.com. It'll take you right to the subscription. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. You can email me directly at podcast@greenleafmusic.com. And here's Fabian Almazan. Fabian, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
It's great to hear this music and talk with you. There's a lot of music topics I want to get into, but that track we were just listening to from your album, Alcanza, made me wonder about the community aspects of organizing your groups. You know, you have a community of players around you, not just in your bands, but on the label and just people you've been playing with for at least a decade. So organizing that and running this community-focused label, Biophilia, and the really strong message that you put in your music towards environmental action and justice. I guess my question is, do you see all of that as of a piece, the organizing the band and organizing in the community?
Sure. Once again, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And, you know, you've definitely been an inspiration. And as far as, you know, finding that energy and courage to follow my dreams in the same way that you have your whole life. So thank you. I would say I'm typically, throughout my life, I've been a pretty introverted person, but there's just things in the world that are bigger than me, and I feel like a sense of urgency when it comes to climate change and that sort of thing. I also have a deep love and appreciation for music as an art form, and I find it medicinal. I find that throughout my life, it's helped me during periods of darkness that I really needed the help, and it also helps me celebrate the joys that occur throughout my life. So just those two things make me find the courage, or whatever word you want to use to describe it, to kind of follow through. I remember when I was a teenager, my early 20s, I read a short story called The Death of Ivan Illich, in which Ivan Illich is on his deathbed, and he regrets his entire life on his deathbed, that he never followed through with any of his dreams. He He always did what he thought he had to do or needed to do. So that's really stuck in there. It's a Leo Tolstoy short story. So yeah, I don't want to have any regrets in the end of my life. I feel a sense of responsibility and urgency to sort of, I don't know, fulfill a role of leadership, if you want to call it that, just to make sure that the things that I love and are dear to me are in people's, I don't know, radar. I just don't feel like neither the environment or sustainability or climate change, and additionally the world of the arts, music, is something that I can just let kind of exist without me doing everything I possibly can to help it.
You feel like that's the imperative when you're writing these ensemble pieces, and for that one you wrote the lyrics as well?
Yeah, I mean, how I mentioned earlier, the whole notion of thinking of music as medicine or therapeutic, whatever you want to call it, I really do believe strongly that it is something in our lives that can heal us, mm-hmm. that can help us navigate all of these complicated emotions and situations that we experience throughout our lives. I always try to think of myself first and foremost as a living thing, a human being, and then a musician. I try that to be the guide, not the genre or tradition or anything like that. It's a fine balance for me of dedicating myself to the craft of music, of composition theory, the architecture of it, and then just completely letting go of that to make sure that the human element is still the most important aspect of it.
And then you bring in, what is that? I guess it's 8 musicians on that piece?
Yeah. Yeah, and they're all incredible. I met all of them throughout different periods in my life. I married one of them.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I met Henry Cole and Linda Oh when I was going to Manhattan School of Music, and it was I pretty quickly identified them as two of the most dedicated musicians I had met. You know Linda, she's just unstoppable. She's constantly trying to improve, constantly trying to study all different aspects of music. The same thing applies to Henry. He never stops practicing, ever. And I just really admired their devotion to it. The string quartet, I met them throughout different occasions, and they're all beautiful people. I feel like as a band, we play a certain way because there is that friendship element of it, which, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to happen with all bands, but I do feel pretty grateful that it has happened with this one. And then Camila Mesa, just a beautiful artist in her own right. I met her, I don't know how many years ago, but you know, I was born in Cuba. I'm a Spanish speaking American, and the second I heard her sing a Victor Jara song, something kind of clicked inside me, which naturally I felt like I wanted to write something for her to sing in Spanish, because it felt like there was something dormant in me that she kind of just rekindled.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. That's interesting when you hear somebody play and it awakens a part of you that makes you want to compose something that you wouldn't have thought of otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You feel like, this band mostly is carried over, I guess, yeah, mostly has carried over into your latest album, that's for Biophilia also. And I guess 2 years passed in between, and you probably played a lot of gigs together. Do you find yourself now writing things, reflecting inspiration from all the different members of the band?
Yeah, it becomes more and more challenging to find the time to do as much composing as I would like to, because of different circumstances. But yeah, I feel a little more comfortable in my skin. I think as a composer, I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but for me, it's taken some time to be comfortable with not even my own voice, but just being comfortable with allowing myself not to stop the process by being too self-critical. And it definitely helps to have played with these musicians for as long as I have. It just gives me a little more confident and not as a little more confidence in the process, and just letting it happen rather than obsessing about every single little detail. I mean, there is a time and a place to obsess about details, but when it becomes consuming, that's when I think there might be something to analyze.
Interesting. I wanted to play this track that you sent me from your newest album, which is called This Land Abounds with Life. And I'm going to let a pretty longish portion of it play, because I think the way the form unfolds is so interesting and such a big part of the vision of the piece. Did you think about it that way at all?
Which one are we talking about? I can't quite remember.
We're talking about the Everglades.
Oh, the Everglades, yeah. It seems
to start trio, and then people gradually come in, and it starts in a fairly calm place and gets to a much more energetic space.
Yeah, I was born in Cuba, and we left when I was young. I was 9 years old, I believe, and then I lived in Miami, Florida from the age of 9 or 10 until I was 18. And I always cared deeply about the environment. And down there, we have the River of Life, as they call it, which is the Everglades. It's one of the biggest national parks in the country, and it's this huge wetland. And I used to go out there as often as I possibly could. And the fascinating thing to me is the landscape. It kind of, when composing that piece, I was thinking of it almost like a painter that does a series on one subject, but then different times of the day or different lighting. That's what fascinates me about the Everglades. Just it looks like it's just water, grass, and it rains. But there's so much going on. There's so much the complexity of life that's going on there. And you know, some days would just be beautiful sunshine, and then others we have a lot of hurricanes and that sort of thing. And, you know, not to mention human intervention, there's a lot of invasive species in the Everglades now, and the whole ecosystem is really struggling to find its balance again, because, you know, fertilizers make their way into the water, and you get all these algae blooms. So, yeah, this was my portrait of the Everglades, as many memories as I could have of different days that I experienced in the Everglades.
I know you and I have been involved in things for supporting the Natural Resources Defense Council, and I'm thinking maybe the title of this record, there's an overarching environmental theme and message here.
Yeah, I mean, I think not to get too pessimistic, but where we find ourselves today as a human race is complicated, because I do include human beings as life as well, you know.
Oh, yeah. This intelligent life?
Yeah.
Leave that alone.
Yeah. So it's just a reminder that this land does abound with life. There is beauty here. There are things worth living for, and we are not the only ones here. Let's take care of each other. Let's treat each other with empathy.
Nice. Thank you. The Everglades from Fabian Almazan's latest album on Biophilia. It's This Land Abounds with Life. And I was remarking, listening to that, how after all these years, Mahan's sound is so instantly recognizable to me. Just a gorgeous sound and the rhythm, so flowing and upbeat and lively and supportive of everything that's happening. So wonderful to hear that. First, I wanted to ask about the electronics that's happening towards the top of that track. Seems to be like some shimmering, echoing thing happening. Like it's just trio playing.
That pretty much describes it.
But I wanted technological.
I've been experimenting with electronics and music for a while now. I think it's because I didn't own my own computer till I was in my 20s. I didn't, we were immigrants. We didn't have money. So, I was kind of fascinated by that. And again, for me, the question of genre or musical tradition, it's kind of like the analogy, there's a museum and there's a gallery, and the museum is where we have all the masterpieces and we protect them for culture and society, but then in the gallery is where the artists are sharing their new works with you. I have an appreciation for the museum, but I live in the gallery. And that's what I do as far as the electronics. I'm just trying to bring to life what it is that I'm imagining. Sparkly. I use a bunch of different guitar pedals. I run the acoustic piano through it. That's the majority of the electronics that you hear. It's not a synthesizer or anything. It's the process audio
extremely high tech is what you're saying.
Stubborn. I've had mostly...
I'm sarcastic, Fabian. Sorry.
No, I know, but it's just I've been traumatized from years and years of failure trying to learn how to use all this stuff, because it's not something that a lot of pianists do. I've had many confused sound people on stage having absolutely no idea why they're hearing the sounds they're hearing, even though I try to explain to them how it works.
So it's microphones attached to the soundboard going through guitar pedals that you're controlling with your feet from the piano bench.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No.
No, and I've experimented with running it through a laptop as well. And I've done synthesizers, I've done virtual instruments. You name it, I've probably done it.
And... I mean, when you are recording, I mean, the quality of the recording is so wonderful. Do you do it separately or do you do it simultaneously while you're playing?
Simultaneously.
So all captured in real time?
For the most part. I might add a synthesizer here and there afterwards, but for the most part, I try to capture it in real time.
And it's interesting because there's a track that we're going to hear from a much earlier album. That has, I mean, it sounds different, but it's the same process, I guess. It sounds like something happening to the piano sound in real time. So,
which track are you referring to?
Well, you recorded a part of a Shostakovich string quartet.
Oh, yeah, that's the very first thing I ever recorded. I had no idea what I was doing.
10 years ago, with basically the same band as you're still playing with. So that's admirable. It takes a lot of skill to keep a band together, and a lot of hard work and persistence and long hours and phone calls. And that's cool. What I thought we could listen to next would be this piano solo piece that you sent. And I mean, you've played piano in my quintet. And I wish that we were still out there on the road doing that, because I had so much fun playing with you.
Well, we'd be playing today, right?
We would be playing today.
Yeah, we'd be at the Jazz Standard.
We would be at Jazz Standard for Busy Atmosphere.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to that, too.
Yeah, and you're on this record of mine that got released today, May 1st.
Woo!
Yeah, I might throw a little bit of that at you a little later.
Okay.
But the thing that I was going to say is just your dedication to the instrument is so incredible. And I guess my question is, was that something that was always part of your experience, like from a young age? You know, most of us start playing music, we're, you know, very grateful that our parents or someone in our lives turned us on to playing an instrument. And then some people obsess, and I get the sense maybe that was you.
Is. Yeah. I started, well, my dad is a bass player, so I have something about bass players, you just can't get rid of them.
Is he jealous now that you're married to
me? Oh, whenever we talk on the phone, he's like, yeah, whatever. How's Linda? Can I talk to Linda? I started playing the piano. I have an older sister. She's 4.5 years older than me, and she was taking lessons from, and I'm not exaggerating, an older woman in our neighborhood in Havana in Cuba. Her name was Cucu, and she was in her 90s. Mm. So anything my sister did, I wanted to do. So as soon as she started taking lessons, I think I would have been like 6 or 7 years old, I demanded that I take lessons too. And something happened, I don't know, it felt like this was it pretty quickly. I mean, I was a kid, I was 7 years old, and I could pretty quickly tell, maybe not necessarily that it was going to be my job or a career, but it's somehow I needed this in my life. And I've tried to quit, and I can't.
What do you mean you've tried to quit?
You know, there have been moments in my life where it's just so difficult because I care so much. Sometimes you just want to give up. You know, it's just being completely honest. But it's always been the music itself that's brought me back. There was one period in my life particularly where I thought this was it. Like, I couldn't take it anymore. It was too much. And then I heard a Brahms sonata in E minor. And I'm back. It's because that medicine, it felt like exactly what I needed.
Right. So just when you think you've gotten out,
yeah,
it pulls you back in. But not quitting the piano. Quitting the piano?
Yeah, I was just, I was very frustrated with music because I had something in my head that I just couldn't get out. You know, I was young too. As I've gotten older, I have patience now. But you know, when you're young, you're ambitious. At least I was. I don't know. Yeah. And I feel it's important to talk about these things now, because you know I teach at the New School. I have some students, and you know, kids in their late teens, early 20s. They may put up this front like they've got it all figured out and everything's cool, but underneath, like, they're frightened just the same way I was. So I feel it's very important for me to talk about in an honest manner not just the successes that I've had, but also the dark, difficult moments. And just because, we want to help each other. This isn't your run-of-the-mill profession.
Right. You
know, it's not like we're going to the office. It can get very intense very easily.
It's making me, I mean, you seem to have such an organic relationship to the instrument, flowing and
easy. It's complicated.
And maybe it came from that struggle of having that thing in your head that you couldn't figure out how to get out and going through the fight that it takes to figure what that is. So that you recorded this piece in 2015. It's, First Realm Karlsruhe.
I think awesome would describe the experience pretty accurately. It was unlike anything I've ever done before. It was part of the SWR Jazz Commissions. So they basically invited me to go over to Germany and bring whichever musicians I wanted to and record a bunch of live concerts with a crew of 16 people with like two trucks full of audio equipment.
The German National Radio, Südwest Rundfunk.
Yeah. Yeah, so we were, we started off in Baden-Baden, which is right by the Black Forest. And Gunter, the man that kind of was running everything, suggested... Yes, exactly.
Amazing.
One of the nicest human beings I've ever met. Yeah, so supportive. He came up with the idea that before we performed all of these shows, that the music that we were the music we were performing was co-composed by the band. But he thought I should just go before the audience went in and just record solo piano. I think we did it three times in three different venues. And it was just, you know, very last minute. He told me, just sit down and improvise. And this is what came out.
Nice. So that's all improvised.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. And you did three different ones, so there's three different versions of your improvisation on what sounds like a very, very nice German piano.
Mm.
Yeah, that's cool. And I saw that in the project there were a lot of people who are now in New York and sort of in the community of great creative players.
Yeah, it was a really nice experience for me. I felt very pampered to just be able to focus on the music. We don't get to do that often.
You know, the European national radio broadcasters have been incredibly important in the development of the music and done quite a number of productions in different countries, but also in Germany there's several And they usually have a big band associated with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just makes you wish that in this country we could support something like that.
Maybe keep voting.
Yeah. We'll keep voting and marching when we're allowed to go out and march again.
Yeah.
It made me curious, really, about your involvement with poetry, you know, writing lyrics and I've tried doing that and it's just a disaster. I might go try again, but it's so hard.
Yeah.
Capture the spirit in words.
It's a lot more difficult for me than writing music. Absolutely.
And when you wrote, I mean, I'm going to go to Rhizome, which I guess was your previous record on Biophilia.
Well, that one was actually Artishare / Blue Note. Bruce Lundvall made that happen.
I didn't know. Great.
Sorry. Go ahead. No,
go on, please.
No, it's just I met Bruce through playing in Terrence Blanchard's band. And I never sought out any sort of record deal or anything like that. I had too much respect to do anything like that. So I was extremely honored when he reached out to me. This would have been 2 or 3 years before he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
He called me to go into his office at Blue Note Records. And I just sat in there and just spoke to him for hours. And it's one of the most memorable conversations I've ever had. He told me about a time that Charlie Parker stole his hat. Yeah. He said that he went to, I can't remember which jazz club, and he put his hat in the entrance. And I think it was Charlie Parker's gig. Charlie Parker came in, played the gig, and as he was leaving, Bruce noticed that he was looking at the hat and just a bird put the hat on and left. So that was pretty cool.
That's a badge of honor. Get your hat stolen by Charlie Parker.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bruce Lundvall was amazing.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that he reached out to you and that happened that way. I wasn't aware of that. So Rhizome was before Biophilia started. So this is now 2014.
Well, no, Biophilia began in, I think technically in 2011, but when Bruce Lundvall asked you to do something, you do it.
I see. So, I see. So you got a courtesy from Biophilia to allow you to go and record for Blue Note.
Yes.
And
I mean, at that point, Biophilia only had 2 albums out, so it was very much a baby then.
And did Bruce produce this record then, or did you produce it yourself?
No, I produced it myself. He asked to listen to it once.
Yeah.
And so I went to his office again, and he listened to it. He said, great, and that was it.
Nice.
Yeah.
You didn't have to change anything.
Yeah, I was very nervous because I'd never been in that situation before. I had always had the freedom of doing whatever I wanted to do. And, I did do that.
Well, right, Bruce was wise enough to let you do what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah.
No. So, but you went in the studio with pretty much the same group of players, right? It's
yeah.
Henry and the string quartet.
The only difference that Sarah Caswell was the violinist, the first violinist in Rhizome, because Megan Gould, who is the band member, she gave birth that week. So
it's a good excuse.
Yeah.
and it's Camila Meza again.
Yeah.
Singing on this. So this is a lyric that you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Sol Del Mar. Can you elucidate slightly?
That was the first song that I ever wrote with lyrics, and it was inspired after listening to Camila. I heard her at a venue in Queens called La Terraza,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess most of my pieces are very visual. I've always liked impressionistic paintings, Monet. So I guess with this one, I kind of was. He has the sunset paintings. I can't remember what they're called. But visually, that's what I was imagining. I don't typically want to tell people how to interpret the music, but just since I am the source of it or the facilitator of it, that piece, the lyrics, what I'm trying to hint at is that everybody should be themselves, follow their bliss, be comfortable in who you are, and don't feel like you have to be somebody else.
Nice. So. Sol del Mar. Now, I didn't realize that this record, The Personalities from 2011, was actually Biophilia. Biophilia. And it was also, I guess, maybe when your trio with Linda and Henry Cole and Linda Mahon Oh started.
Yeah.
And you also have Meg Okura and a quartet of strings. So it's like same instrumentation. And is this, when did you get out of Manhattan School? You said that you met them there. So was it like right after that or?
Yeah, I met Linda in 2006. I met Henry, I think before then, maybe 2005.
Okay.
Henry was only in school for a semester or two from what I remember. Yeah, I think we recorded the album in 2009, which was the year that I graduated. For the master's program.
And so I got to ask you about the label I want to ask you about running it now because I'm going through a similar process, but also, you know, starting it, deciding, okay, here's my first record as a leader and it's my trio with the string quartet and I'm going to start my own label to put it out. Seems like a bold stance.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Biophilia has this environmental aspect to it. Did it have it already at that time?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was trying to take it one step at a time. I had the vision for it to become what it is becoming now back in 2008, 2009, but I couldn't do everything I needed to do. I needed to focus on the piano and composing, just other things. And then it was around 2015, 2016 that it became more of a possibility to really jump in. That's when we developed the Biofolio, which is the substitute for the CD.
Mm-hmm. Right, because you don't manufacture CDs, and yeah. it's partially that we all have to share digitally now, but also partially just resources, using less plastic.
Yeah, I just wanted to find a comfortable middle ground between the music fan that wants a physical project, a physical product, so that it's environmentally friendlier than a CD, but also so that the artists can make a living and sell a physical product after they perform their gigs. I'm sure there's a better solution out there somewhere, but I'm trying.
Well, I think you're doing great, and you're releasing so many different artists. It's just fantastic to see it.
Thank you.
How do you keep the ship running?
Not a lot of sleep. I'm definitely learning as I go. I knew that it was going to be challenging when I started it, but I had no idea it was going to be this challenging.
What's the most challenging part?
Just the volume of just the amount of things I have to get done.
Details.
Yeah, administrative things. I feel a huge responsibility to the artists that are on the label that I function in the most professional, astute way possible.
Yeah.
Because you know, they're trusting me with their creation. That's their livelihood.
Right.
I've learned a lot. I always was the type of musician that if you were to imagine that line in the sand from the artist and then music business, mm-hmm. I never ever went into the music business part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now,
Well, I think the way I feel about it, and I'd be curious to know if you would agree, is that, I'm running Greenleaf Music, this umbrella company. But I don't, because we're doing what we want to do and we're supporting the music and musicians that we believe in, I am on the music business side, but it still feels like music. It still feels like, you know, what I'm involved in is something that's central to supporting the art itself.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't regret doing this at all, but it is a learning curve from like spreadsheets, you know, that sort of thing. Like it's,
don't get me started with spreadsheets.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I have to learn formulas. And it's just very non, creative artistic things that are 100% necessary. And it is a craft. It is an art form all unto itself. It's a small window into other people's careers and jobs. It's all fascinating, but
well, and it's support for them too.
I'm sorry.
It's support for them. It's a platform.
Yeah.
For their art and for what they do, and I think that the folios that you do make are incredibly beautiful.
Thank you.
And there must be some work going into the manufacturing side just of that. Itself.
Yeah, I had never designed anything in my life. I'm a patent holding inventor now. Unfortunately, right now, not to deviate from the topic of music, but because of COVID-19, the manufacturing facilities are closed. So we have three albums coming out that we have to postpone the release of the physical product, but it's absolutely the right thing to do.
You mean to not delay the release?
No, to not demand that the factory gets going. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I went through that also with some release planning and dates, and I just decided the music has to go forward and
me too.
We'll
exactly.
Do it to the best extent that we can.
Yeah.
And there are ways, as we know now, for people to hear it.
Yeah.
Great. You recorded this Shostakovich string quartet, a movement, and very interestingly rearranged. And it was your first album.
Yes, the first track on my first album.
The trio, my first track on my first album was Vayburn. So,
oh, cool.
And I felt like, wow, this is jazz. And then I learned that not everyone was going to agree with me.
I love Vayburn. I mean, his pieces are so short. They're like tiny little poems. We can talk about him later. But Shostakovich is a very very dark period when he composed the string quartets. Second World War was going on. It's a passacaglia, the movement that I arranged, which basically just means that it's the same harmonic idea that just keeps repeating over and over and over, but with different variation. I was just profoundly moved by the music, not knowing when it was written or anything. I just thought it was beautiful music. I just wanted to tinker with it.
Let's hear a little of that. Shostakovich, such beautiful ensemble playing, such a great arrangement. Thank you so much for sharing it with me. I can't leave this show without playing a piano solo from my new album that you play on. And I like to, when I'm, you know, this is a tribute to Dizzy Gillespie, and I like to, when I'm thinking deeply about someone and their life and music, get into their musical DNA and start messing around and making changes. And so I was working with the tune Con Alma, a beautiful Dizzy Gillespie piece. And I started, you know, doing transformations, to changing it, and it became something else. And I didn't know what to call it. And I had all these little plays on words, and I wasn't going to call it Sin Alma, which I understand is one of your tunes.
Yeah.
So then when you came into the band, I was like, well, okay, it's obvious. It's on Amazon. That's the only thing that it can be called. And you play your ass off on it. So thank you for that.
Thank you. It was a great experience for me to get to record with you. I was really impressed with you. Anytime I record with someone that's recorded as many things as you have, I'm just really blown away by just your experience and how you go about you know, the way that you lead the band in the studio. And yeah.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. It was a great session. And you know, it took me a long time to think about Dizzy and do something for him. Because it's such a huge topic. I'm sure he's been a hero for you as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, among Cuban musicians, Dizzy is huge because he was able to get a lot of Cubans out of the country. And, you know, whatever you're, not you specifically, but the listeners, you know, I don't want to get too political, but there were a lot of musicians in Cuba that really wanted to leave so that they could pursue their dreams, which wasn't feasible in Cuba. Musicians like Arturo Sandoval, Paquito Rivera, Gonzalo Rubalcaba. Yeah, Dizzy found all of them and just, you know, brought them under his wing and eventually helped them leave Cuba and find freedom elsewhere. So just in that regard, yeah, he's a very beloved figure to the Cuban jazz community, both in Cuba and abroad.
Yeah. Wow. We didn't really talk about influences or heroes in the interview at all, but is there anybody, I know it's a hard question when somebody says, you know, what's your favorite, but more like, you know, are there any big figures that you see as having been guiding lights for you in the music?
Sure. Definitely Ravel. Maurice Ravel is a big source of inspiration for me, and Stravinsky and Brahms.
That's Mike Stravinsky.
Oh, no. Yeah. Mikey. Mikey from the Bronx.
The block, yeah.
Yeah. But honestly, somebody that I think about a lot recently, just because I haven't heard anything about him, and he was a huge influence on me, is Keith Jarrett. I haven't heard anything about him. I hope he's doing well during this pandemic. I know he's a very private individual. But yeah, I mean, my generation of musicians, I can't think of anyone that wasn't influenced by him out of my peers. So yeah, I hope he's okay.
Yeah, we all do. So many people.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you for joining me. So nice to hear you talk about the music. And
yeah, it's great seeing you. I really wish we were playing tonight.
We were playing. Yeah, we all do. We'll be out there.
Yeah.
Out there again.
Yeah.
So this, I'm going to leave this with the starting at the piano solo until the end of Con Almazan, and you really sound so great on this. So thank you for your music.
You.
And stay safe.
You too.
Thanks for listening to the Greenleaf Music Podcast, A Noise from the Deep. We'll be back soon.